Welcome to Why Not Me, The World podcast, hosted by Tony Mantor. Broadcasting from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Join us as our guests tell us their stories. Some will make you laugh, some will make you cry. Real life people who will inspire and show that you are not alone in this world. Hopefully, you gain more awareness, acceptance, and a better understanding for autism around the world. Hi, I'm Tony Mantor. Welcome to Why Not Me, The World. Today's guest is Samuel Huber. He was diagnosed autistic at age 14. Now in his 30s, he's here to tell us his story. Thanks for coming on, Samuel.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Yes, I really appreciate you coming on. So you was diagnosed autistic at age 14. What led to that diagnosis?
I was first diagnosed with ADHD and nonverbal learning disability, and I just was not getting the services that my mom thought I deserved. And, she's a psychologist herself. She was pretty sure I was on the spectrum. But in order to get those services, I needed to get that fish diagnosis. She took me to a different, person to get diagnosed, and then I was diagnosed at 14. And that's the reason behind me being diagnosed so late.
Well, even though you got diagnosed late, it's still a good thing that you did, because I've met people that are in their 30s and 40s, and then that's when they found out they was autistic.
Yeah, I've met them too, because I know the big thing is, people that are at that age or even older are just getting diagnosed. They were just called eccentric or quirky or, some sort of euphemism. Because autism wasn't a hot word until really the last 20 years. Because before then, it's childhood schizophrenia, basically.
Yeah, I know a speech therapist that went to college 20 years ago, and she told me that she had one class in one semester that covered autism, and that was it for 4 years. So you're right, 20 years ago it wasn't well known.
Right.
So when you was diagnosed, did it change your life at all, or did it kind of make things make more sense for you where you was 14?
To be honest, I was not really aware of how much it changed or really what it meant until I started working with autistic individuals as a TA myself. So I really saw the variations of different kinds of autism, and I really saw how far I come. I'm like, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. Because back in my day, there wasn't all this, hubbub about autism. And just seeing the different functionality levels just really opened my eyes to how my brain works and how it, varies from the neurotypical mind.
So now over the years, you've learned and grown. How do you see your mind changes and looks at things differently than your friends?
We think in pictures. It's I think in reverse of how my friends think. I just take longer to get a thought across. I like to, view myself as a storyteller. My friend asked me how to describe it. It's a Tarantino movie. I start at the end and then I work my way back to the beginning, jump to the middle, and there's all these scenes jumping. First I'm in the first grade, then in the sixth grade, back to the first. It's like that. We're just these natural storytellers that really, just jump all over the place.
Okay, so you see in more pictures than you said?
Right. For example, if you were to say the word barn, I would see the red building before my brain would process the word.
Okay.
And that's the big thing is, in neurotypical classrooms, they're taught through associating the words with the image first, but I need the image first before I know the word. Basically, what's that? A barn. Okay. and I can burn the image into my brain. That's what a barn is. Another example is how I learned to read. I can't sound words out at all. Like, my brain just can't do it. So I had to memorize what words look like. This is va. This is, you know, impossible. This is, you know, I had to, like, memorize what words look like.
Wow, that's very interesting. I spoke with a young lady yesterday, and she processes words and pictures and everything with music. So the fact that you do it with pictures and she does it with music is, I think, quite interesting and shows the differences that people can do.
Yeah, and music's, and, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast is music also helps my brain make connections faster. Like, I'll listen to Miles Davis, and like, the pictures will come faster versus if there's no music at all. It's my brain is much slower. There's something magical about music that not only enhances my social skills, but increases the autistic mind's brain function, in my opinion.
Wow, that's really good. Music is just something that I love too. So what are some of your favorite artists that you listen to?
I have a wide range. Everything from, like I said, Miles Davis, Coltrane to the Grateful Dead, Fish, Arion, wow. Pink Floyd, Yes, Rush, Beethoven, really, you know, Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, you know, it's all over the map. It's what mood I'm in.
Sure.
Really. But really, I would say improv music is my biggest love, because it's like, it's all about trusting yourself in the moment as a musician and taking a song, you know, beyond its normal borders. And I like the idea, like, a lot of, you listen to one concert, it could be 4 minutes, the next minute, the same set could be 35 minutes.
Right.
But there's still like order in that chaos, where in life, you have to improvise all the time. And that really taught me how to do that in a safe way.
So what was your school years like? Did you go to public school, private school, or homeschool? How did that affect you?
A bit of everything. Because, like, it wasn't like, I never had an IEP, you know. Yeah. So I went to a lot of different schools trying to figure out what works for me. So I did some homeschooling. I did some private, some public. All over the place. But, you know, most of, I would say, middle school and high school was private. And just really, that was like the most, I guess, autistic focused school I went to. And then college, I was a normal college.
Okay. What'd you go to college for?
I originally said psychology, but I couldn't pass the math class no matter how hard I tried. So I ended up doing family studies, and I think psychology to be a psychologist. I took psychology to understand people.
Right.
Because I was tired of, you know, missing all the unwritten social rules, missing body language cues. I'm like, let me tackle this in a scientific and visual way. So I took a body language class where it literally became a puzzle to me. Like, you know, the cheekbone going this high, the eyes dilating this much means X.
Okay.
It really elevated my social skills, being able to communicate with people.
Wow, that's really good. So how does your family support you, and how do they react to what you're doing now?
A mixed, you know, reaction. Like, I'm sure, like, my wife is very, you know, very proud, you know, proud of me for, you know, showing, you know, breaking the social norm that autistic people can't form deep, meaningful relationships. Like, people are shocked that when I do autism conferences that, wait, you have children? Like, I've literally had, like, I would say 8 to 10 people say, I didn't know autistic people's, you know, sexual organs worked even, that they could reproduce.
Wow.
Like, this is just very bizarre thing to me. I'm like, yeah, everything works down there. And then they're asking, like, how do you do this? Well, me and my wife work on communication constantly.
Right.
And she realized, and the way she looks at wow, autism is anthropologically, like, is a different culture. And that really changed my perspective. Yeah, it's not a disability, it's a culture, because we do have our own dialect. But, like, for example, our facial expressions aren't in our face, but in our hands.
Okay.
Like, off screen, my hand is doing all this waving about.
Right.
You know, really helping me process and think. In terms of my parents, you know, that, like, I do a talk show with my dad, What's on Your Mind, Bob, and we're writing a book together. It's really helped us come to grips with our relationship, because growing up, my dad was just more of, you can do this, and he would keep trying to, like, learn the sound words out. It took him, you know, a lot of years to realize Sam can't sound words out in his head. He just can't do it. Doesn't make him less than or anything. It just, he has to learn to read his own way. And the big thing is, like, I really try to push the, you know, envelope, and that makes them nervous, because, like, they don't know how the world's going to react and stuff like that. But overall, I would say, to answer your question, I believe that, you know, everyone's proud of me for being so open about my experience of being an autistic person.
I really like the fact that you brought it up, that your wife and yourself look at that as a different culture. I think that's just tremendously good. This is the first time that I've heard that used like that. And I just think that it's just very, very cool.
Yeah. Because it is, if you sit back and watch autistic people interact with each other, you'll start to pick up that they have their own dialect. Like, that, like, for my wife, who's neurotypical, if I do my Tarantino storytelling, she's like, just bullet points, Sam, like, boom, boom, boom. But, like, when I'm talking to another autistic individual, like, they're following the storyline, like, oh, yeah, I see how you're connecting that way out there. And then it's like, and she knows that, you know, my hands get way more active too when I'm talking to someone who's also autistic, and vice versa, their hands. And all of a sudden, like, it's like we're speaking our own language to each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a neurotypical person will come into the conversation, and then we'll turn and we'll lower our hands and we'll start speaking neurotypical. And it's just, if you sit back and just watch us, you'll see that. And it really opens up to, you know, what autism really is, which, as a public speaker, you know, I've been now advocating for 6 years that it's a culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Now, you mentioned something about music saving your life. Is that what, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, music's my big special interest. Like, I probably listen to four to eight hours of music a day. Okay? So there's always music going on in my home, really.
Okay.
The big thing is, like, I didn't have friends until, I would say, 15. And it was through the fact that I started wearing band T-shirts. And someone was like, oh, you like the band? And it started, you know, it was the first time I really had conversations with people my own age.
Right.
Instead of just mom and dad. And as a teenager, I was, like, you know, very suicidal, because I was so lonely.
Wow.
And it's worthless. But then I started making these connections with other people, and I started going to concerts, and, like, it became this obsession, because I was able to talk to total strangers, and we're all gelling on the same thing, our love for the band that we're seeing. And it really also helped push me out of my shell, like going to upstate New York to see Phish by myself on a bus, you know, no parents.
Okay.
And I had a wacky, crazy adventure up there doing that. And I was able to really zone out the social anxiety I had, because I was so focused on, you know, having this, you know, experience and just enjoying the music.
That's really good. So in your formative years, did anxiety ever come into your life? And if it did, how did you work around it so that you was able to figure it out and continue your path on what you wanted to do in life?
Yeah, I mean, I never had, like, the point of, like, tearing apart a room or becoming, like, physically aggressive, but it was more, I would say, an internal, like, autistic meltdown, like, all of those feelings that, you know, autistic people describe. And music always has been, always will be the thing that always calms me down the most. Like, you know, as a teenager, it was heavy metal, in college, it started becoming like the music, you know, hippie music from the 60s and 70s. And then as an older adult, jazz and has really, I always put on jazz when I need to calm down. It's just, you know, soothing and just following the long progression of chords. It really helps distract my mind from whatever I'm melting down about.
That's really good. So how about anxiety? Did that affect you? And if it did, can you expand on that?
Oh, yes. Like, I would say anxiety was my biggest hurdle to overcome. Like,
okay.
Like in all relationships and just life in general. Before I found God, just really ran anxious. The only time I wasn't anxious was when music was playing. The point where I always had my earbuds in, and it would piss everyone, but that would piss everyone off because they try and talk to me. But I have AC/DC blasting in my headphones or
yeah
something, and they want to talk to me, but like it's the only thing that kept me regulated for so long. And
right. Well, music is a great thing. I mean, I do production and work with all kinds of musicians. So yeah, it definitely has that calming, or it can just put you in any place that you want to be. So it's right. Really good. I'm glad that you found it. That's great.
Yeah, I mean that's like you said, music is very transformative. Like you can listen to a rock opera and be taken to another dimension, or listen to a simple folk song and imagine yourself on a railroad.
Yeah, yeah. So now you said you're married and you have kids?
Yeah, I have two kids.
Two, okay. How old are they?
One is six and the other one's one.
Oh, that's awesome. Two great ages. I'm sure that you're enjoying them as you should. So tell me, what are you currently doing for work now?
Right now, I am an aseptic processing technician. Basically, what I do is I make a component for cancer drugs in a clean room, and that allow and also I maintain the lab, and the main thing about aseptic is keeping things clean. And the funny thing is, like, I only went into lab work 2 years ago, and like I'm a fish to water, because like, if you go into a lab, you throw a rock, you'll hit an autistic person. It was like the first time, like, I wasn't the only one on staff that was autistic. It was just like a whole, I could like do a autistic hand gesture, and the person was like, yeah, okay, I'll be over in a moment. Like they would get like that signal. And that was when I was like, I found where all my people are going as adults.
Right. So now I think you mentioned it earlier that you sometimes will go out and do some public speaking about autism.
Yeah, I have done public speaking on autism in romantic relationship, autism in college, autism in the workplace. Really, like, what happens after you hit 21? Because at least in PA, a lot of services, unless you're, freaking rich and at 21, there's a lot of ASPEs out there that are kind of like, what do I do now? Or, there's an alarming amount of autistics that are not finishing college due to the stress of trying to keep up with neurotypical people, either socially or academically. And I'm finding just talking to them, and it's more of the social aspect. Like, they'll go to a party and, like, I don't want to drink alcohol, but, like, everyone else is, like, getting toasted. And I'm like, here's a secret I did. I would sneak into the kitchen, get empty beer cans, and then I would throw it down. Oh, I just drank another one. And it would look like I had this high tolerance for alcohol.
Yeah, I get that. My trick used to be always having a bottle of beer in my hand. And when people would come over and say, oh, you need a refill, I would just show it to them and say, no, just got one, thanks. So that just goes to prove that everyone has their own little tricks. And as long as it works for them, that's all that really matters.
Right. And that's the big thing I try to teach in my public speaking, is these little it makes autistic people feel more comfortable going into the college setting on their own. So I went to college 2 hours away from my parents. They weren't there to prompt me through a college party. And also, you don't want your parents at a college party.
Absolutely.
Right. So, like, how do I start at a college party? And, I advocate, like, joining social clubs that it's something you're into. If you're really into anime, start an anime club. And, you know, or if you're a musician, start something with music. And really start the ball rolling with that. And then also a romantic relationship. Like, I always end my talks on that with make autism your pickup line. Because, you know, autistic people have a lot to offer when it comes to romantic relationships. And it's not as hard as a lot of us make it out to be.
Sure. And in reality, autistic people have a lot to give anyways.
That's true.
Well, it just comes down to communication and understanding. If everybody could learn how to communicate what's needed and then learn how to accept and understand, then that would make things in life just a little bit easier.
Right. And that's all. If someone were to ask me what I want as an autistic person, I want to be understood.
Absolutely.
And they're, you know, but I have to do my part on that. Like, how I react to my autism is going to, you know, raise the bar for the other person to do. If I act like it's such a huge struggle and it torments me, then the other person's gonna be like, I don't know if I want to hang out with someone that's constantly tormented, but I don't know if it's like, oh, like my socks are green. Oh, and by the way, I'm autistic. You know, and I carry on the conversation in the room, like, oh, it's just a thing. Or if they want to go in depth, just talk about, well, it's my culture. You know, look at my hands, not my face. I have resting bitch face all the time, but it doesn't mean I'm not feeling something.
Right. I've got to say, I really like this conversation, and I think people are going to really get into it because I love your attitude. Even more, I like the fact that you bring up that it's a culture. Of all the people I've spoken with, you're the first person that's actually defined autism as a culture. I think that it's a great definition, and I also believe that a lot of people are going to be helped by this because it's just a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, and I think it needs to be defined this way because, like, the word disability or disorder is so crippling. And also the fact that when I look at other autistic influences out there, like, we're still arguing over what we should be called. I'm like, just end it at culture and celebrate the culture.
Absolutely correct. I mean, there are just so many autistic people out there that are just brilliant. They do so many great things for humanity. What it really comes down to is the definition that some people have for autism is not the correct one, and they have to be learned and taught so they can understand that what they're thinking about is not correct.
Yeah, that's what I have definitely gone through in talking at conferences or just to people in general on Instagram and stuff. Like, the best way I can describe autism and one thing, it's just amplified humanity. We feel what everyone else feels with no filter, like just being human, but, you know, turn it up to 11.
Absolutely. One thing that I think that people misunderstand is they think that people that are autistic look and act differently than they do. What it comes down to is autistic people look just like you and me. So it comes down to, we have to educate these people, give them a better understanding of what autism is so that we can all find a way to live together and thrive together.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because, like, the big thing that I've often heard is, you know, why is autism all of a sudden where were the autistic people when I was born? Like, 50-year-olds are saying this. Like, they were just called something else, like Einstein, Tesla, John Lennon, for example. On the autism spectrum, if you just Google famous people on the spectrum, it's more than just Sheldon Cooper and Rain Man and that. Like, they were contributing to, like, we wouldn't be on the moon without autistic people. Like I said, you can go into a laboratory, like, throw a rock, and you'll hit someone. If you hit someone, most likely they're on the spectrum. We just we've been in the shadows moving humanity forward. All it takes is a Google search, and you'll find out. It reaches across generations.
It sure does. I spoke with a lady last week. She's going to be 60 next month. She found out she was autistic about 45, and she feels like she lost 4 decades because when she was younger, everybody thought she was just acting up and just being a bad child. In reality, she was just dealing with her autism, and at that point, no one really knew what it was. So it has come a long way in the last 20 years. We're starting to understand, but we just need to take it to a higher level of understanding so that people can understand what she did, because she eventually embraced it and used it to help her. So now she's doing many good things, and anybody can do that.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. I've had my own interview show. Like during the pandemic, I had Heroes of Autism was my show, and I interviewed a lot of women on the spectrum, and women are still facing this whole thing that it's a boy's disorder, that the ratio is 4 to 1. Just as many autistic women out there as there are men. It's just, for some reason, you know, the medical world is just, oh, she's just, you know, being cutesy or like some feminine euphemism. And a lot of women don't get diagnosed until their 20s or 30s, I found in my interviews. And I think that's a crime that if we just, again, treat as a culture, how are autistic women treated in their own culture? And a lot of them, you know, are brilliant, you know, women just as there are brilliant people in neurotypical cultures. And they need more of a shout out than they've been getting. Like boys have been getting all the glory. And now I think the women need to have their day.
I agree 100%. I did a press release a few weeks ago, and in it, I had Tori Clark, which was my first episode on my podcast, with Rachel Mosley, who's coming on my podcast in the near future. They both were at a function that was put on by autistic people for autistic people over in the UK. She told me that that was one of the first times that she had seen two women in a press release about autism, and it just made her feel really good. So I agree 100% with you that they need their props, and I think we need to let people know that women can thrive just as well as men.
That's really cool, and you know, thank you for doing that. And that's the other big thing. I think autistic people need to be talking at their own conferences. Like, when I talk at conferences, usually I'm the only autistic, you know, person that's speaking. It's usually, I have a PhD, you know, I've worked with autistic individuals for X amount of years, and I just want to stay in the background and be like, but what you're saying is absolutely wrong.
Okay.
But they're, you know, a lot of them still have this, you know, treating it in the medical mindset, this is something to be cured. I'm like, we're not meant to be cured. We just need understanding and regulation like everyone else. Because everyone stims. When you click your pen at work when you're bored, that's stimming. Neurotypical people do this. Because we're autistic, and I said we're amplified people, we do it all the time. That's the only difference.
100% correct. And I think people have to understand that a lot of autistic people out there are very, very intelligent, and they contribute to society in ways they would never even think of.
Right. And we do contribute. Like I said earlier, just Google famous autistic people. You're like I wouldn't be talking to you through my iPhone without an autistic person inventing that iPhone. And Steve Jobs was autistic. And Bill Gates was autistic. He didn't finish high school because, he struggled with fitting the neurotypical curriculum. Einstein failed neurotypical math classes, but we wouldn't have E=mc² without him.
So true. I don't think there's a lot of people out there that realize how many people that were autistic and are autistic that contribute to our society in so many ways. So I think you told me that you was doing something with your dad. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, right now, me and my dad are doing a show called What's on Your Mind, Bob, where me and him, you know, take things that are going to be in the book once it gets published. We're in the middle of trying to get an agent to represent it. But apart from that, I do a show called God Thoughts, which is bringing autistic people to God, where I'm trying to bring individuals who are, you know, autistic onto the show, and we talk about our relationship with God. And, you know, when I have, you know, more time, I do want to go back to just regular interviews with adults on the spectrum and learning their secrets on how they function in this world, because we often feel like we're the minority in the narratypical world. But I want to expose the secret that everyone's neurodiverse. If you take the DSM from psychology, you go up to any individual and talk to them and flip through the DSM, you can diagnose them with something. And I just really want to smash that idea that there is a such thing as a normal person. Like we all think differently. And this, what's actually crushing autistic people today is this idea that we have to get you to conform to this idea, the normal thoughts. And like, I'm like, stop it. You don't think the way I do, and you don't, and the person next to you who's neurotypical doesn't think the way you do.
Exactly. Man, I got to tell you, I've really, really enjoyed this. The tremendous insight that you have given. And I believe that a lot of people that hear this will think a little differently because of it. And I believe that will help a lot of people as well. So give us a final thought on what you'd like to put out there before we end this.
I think the final thoughts are, if you're an autistic individual struggling to make it in this world, focus on what you love and learn to like bring that into reality. And, you know, like just find, like you can form your own structure in your own life. You don't need people prompting you through your life. And if you're still struggling, turn to, you know, God, or treat your life like a song progression, because life is a lot like music that it follows this progression. And sometimes it veers off and you're in 20 minutes of just noodling on it through life. And then you veer back to the main theme of the song. And just enjoy the process of growing up and, you know, live on Hawaiian time. You get there when you get there. Like, don't worry about trying to keep up with neurotypical people, because you're only going to end up burnt out and feel bad about yourself. So just enjoy going through life at your own pace.
That's so true. And I really have to say this has been great. So again, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's been great. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to our show today. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. If you know anyone that would like to tell us their story, send them to tonymantor.com, contact, then they can give us their information so one day they may be a guest on our show. One more thing we ask, tell everyone, everywhere, about Why Not Me, the World, the conversations we're having, and the inspiration our guests give to everyone, everywhere, that you are not alone in this world.